Mr. Chadwick, Rail 13. We were talking about your time with the 1st Battalion DLI when you were in Salonika, and you were telling the story about the mess waiter, and you said that he'd obviously disappeared. I mean, what happened?
Well, on the Sunday morning when we went in for breakfast, one of the Greek waiters brought the local papers in and splashed right across the front. There was about 10 gorillas who'd been shot and killed the previous day, and he was among them. So the stuff he'd been getting, that he said he was wanting to buy for his brothers and sisters, was going to a gorilla movement up in the hills. And the police had put an attack in and shot them, and published all the photographs in the local press. And that was going to be a bit of a shocker, really.
So that seems to indicate you, that security wasn't that good, or what you call security now, you know, you're betting.
What you call employment of LEPs, local enlisted personnel, the Greeks would vouch for these fellows. They would say, oh, he's a nice man, he cost us, etc., etc. So, and you take over from the previous camp in most cases.
But it didn't work.
It didn't work. Very lax in that respect.
What about these local guerrillas? I mean, what were they sort of guerrillas with a purpose, or were they just bandits?
Yeah, I think we never engaged any of them. The police were dealing with the Dole. But there was little forces. As we're saying, we're only talking 18 months after liberation of Greece, so I think there were still pockets of resistance even there. But Salonika was a bit of a communistic area.
Now, what you told us, what were the more usual offences that the police were dealing with? I mean, what was your bread and butter offence, as opposed to the sort of... At Salonika. What was the sort of disciplinary... Was there much of that?
A fair amount.
And how would you deal with them? Where would you pick them up? Would you pick them up when they came back to the barracks, or would you pick them up from the tavernas?
In most cases, the taverna would bring the guard room, and I would go down to the guest house, round them up, bring them back.
When would they ring up? I mean, why would they ring up? What would they be doing wrong, the drunks?
Not paying for the booze. Hit the barman. Throwing the girl across the bar, refuses advances. Having said that,
would it just be one bloke usually, or?
No, a big gang of them. Another punch for the Greeks. The Greeks would be waiting for them when they came out, and one thing and another.
And what would you do when you? So you'd get? Would you get all of your lads?
Or take the truck down and arrest them.
And would there be any trouble when you got there? I mean, would they put up resistance when you said?
With us, or?
Because you said you'd needed your boxing ability helped. No. I mean, would the...
That was a bit of respect they had.
So no one would...
He's a good skin, he's done it.
So no one would take a swing at you?
Oh, no. Never once.
So you'd put them in the back of the van. Would you arrest any of the Greeks, or was that somebody else's business?
The civil police had handled them.
So your job...
The civil police as well.
So your job was to pick up the troops, however many. What if they weren't your battalion, or was it just...
Bring them back if they weren't. Get them out of the way, ring their guard room, and they come and collect them. And they'd have to piece the evidence together and charge them. Section 4 of the Army Act created a disturbance, covered a multitude of sins.
And that's what they'd be done for.
There was nobody seriously hurt or anything. A lot of common sense prevailed. If they were regular Nick Wallers, send them back in. If a young lad in his first offence, 10 days confined to barracks.
So what, you take their details, when would they appear in front of, which officer? Would it be their company commander, or would it be the colonel?
Talk to the company commander first, and then the man with the orders.
Would that be serious enough to go
to? On the strength of the evidence. If it wasn't serious enough, he'd give them CV.
Would it sort of just a punch up in it with the Greeks? Would that go to the colonel or not?
If any anybody was injured, I mean, one of the commissars had his lips smashed to bits in a fight with one of our lads. That went automatically to the CO, the man with the commanding officer. I did the commissar to his duty, he was a cockney, Randall, Commissar Randall. He went up and said he didn't wish any charges to be preferred. Case dismissed. More or less, he asked for it and he got it, which was quite good in that.
So drunken disorder, that's one problem. Was there much, how much of there was, I mean, would that be a nightly occurrence?
Not nightly, but pretty much so, because a lot of time to spare at night, the only places you could go was to learn, as you call them, the old big cat. But having said that about the other ranks, well, we were all of the ranks, I can tell you one night, when four of us got on the top of the science mess, mess building, flat roof, had a few drinks, all ammunition, a rifle, and Charlie Trapman's cafe, which was a damn nuisance, because he used to pick on the lads a lot. And it was all lit with electric light bulbs all round. And we spent the night shooting all the bulbs off. And of course, I turned a blind eye and I was involved. A report came in shooting at Charlie Chaplin's cafe the night before, so I went and had a word with the adjutant, and years later he knew about it. Word had drifted through to him.
He knew it was you lot. This Charlie Chaplin, what do you mean, Charlie Chaplin?
It was called Charlie Chaplin's cafe.
And the proprietor picked on the lads. How did he pick on the lads?
Things like they go in and they pay later on style of thing. And then when he came to the door, it was exorbitant. Or as soon as he wanted to get rid of them, he'd ring the military police sometimes. And they'd come up and they'd literally done nothing.
The real military police, not the regimental police.
Not again. But you see, the reason he got a lot of them, he was only about 400 yards from the camp. So it was easy just to nip out the gate. You haven't far to travel coming back, staggering back to billets.
How did you get on with the military police? You said when you were provost sergeant, they're not always popular.
No. I think a big mistake with the military police is, I say that military policemen should be a minimum of 25 before they become military policemen, and should have served at least 4 or 5 years with a regiment. There's an old saying in the army, before you start to give orders, you should learn to take them. Now you get these young lads at 19 with a stripe on their arm, a drunk with power, and they haven't mellowed sufficient to realise that they're overstepping the mark, and they can't handle the lads like an older man could. And that, I found that caused a lot of friction between the military police and the rank and file. I mean, a lot of cases you could have come in, give them a cut over the lever, or a clout, and sent them back. But no, they'd laid on. Of course, that was helping their promotion. And it didn't help. They didn't mix in messes. They didn't, military police don't come out to your mess much. Or anything. No doubt, working on the old theory, familiarity breeds contempt. So they were aloof and they kept themselves. I regret to say I was quite involved in Berlin.
We'll come back to that then. Well, I mean, this case when you were on top of the flat roof, I mean, was that sort of, you could call it high spirits, a bit dangerous, but I mean...
Not so dangerous, because the lamps were above the building. We weren't that, but I wasn't that bad as well.
What was behind it, though?
Nothing. Just beach. There was no danger to life or limb. one of the lads said, let's blow his lights off.
Did you hit many of them?
Most of them. Black for the nations on the plate of it.
Were there any other incidents like that you were involved in?
Oh, and a few scuffles. A very sad incident happened at the one time I was in Sam's Club. Up the road from us was the Highland Light Infantry. Now, I don't know what your knowledge is, but they have not got a very good reputation. They are very violent. They were violent. And I had a sortie with a Sergeant Major McDermott. It was one nasty piece of gross. He went home with the terrible days of bleeding.
This is from, McDermott was from HLI. Oh,
yeah. Well, this day, they were christening the bagpipes. And it's the first time I've ever seen bagpipes christened. And they made a brew that would kill a horse.
And they invited you lot up there?
So many of us, sounds mess members. And it's all in this big bowl, a massive bowl. And they poured this treacle-like stuff into the bagpipes, and it puts a skin on the pipe or something. And then when they've got enough, tested the pipe, you're on the pot and you drink the stuff. Well, the RSM of the HLI, we didn't mind him much. Jerry Dean got his pink cap and cut the pink off and hung it back on the rack, you see. So when he was leaving, he had a sailor's hat on. Instead of a soldier, you know, there was nothing. But the sad thing, the pipe major, and I can't remember his name, was mortal drunk. But being a soldier, they were going to then beat retreat on the front, which they did. And he got by with it. He was marshalling and wore his bagpipes. Put their instruments away then, back into the Grand Jackson Sounds Club. And had a real party, a few bits of punch-ups, one thing or another. Not a very happy night.
And you had trouble with this McDermott, did you?
Yeah.
What was that caused by? That was on that night.
He was a bad man, and he was a bully, and that's something I couldn't stand. To be honest, I threw a punch at him initially.
What caused it? Do you remember?
Well, he was vicious.
To you or to someone else?
Telling you to shut up and what he'd do and nobody would touch him and all this. So I threw a punch and my IQ put his hand up and I broke his thumb. I've got a bit more after that. But what happened then? The party was over. The RSM groceries hat, puts it on, well, that started a rumpus. Well, it spilled out to the outside. Anyway, we were getting some sort of order, and a truck came to put some of the lads in, a 1500 weight with a tail flap. And the pipe major was so drunk, he said, get him in there and get him back to camp. So they put him in, they let the flap down, a couple more got in with him, really drunk. The truck driver had kangaroo petrol. So he gave a lurch. The pipe major fell out and the truck backed over him and killed him. So that softened the night light down. Oh, I killed him. And of course, there was incidents like this did happen.
How serious were this sort of, you say a bit of fighting? I mean, was it just exchange of blows, or was it people getting what they'd call now a good kicking? You know,
kicking never came into it down there. It was a straightforward
fist. Go for
it. Oh, I must go. Apparently, this McDermott, when he was denied, that behind us, I thought it was a muleteer's camp where they had mules and donkeys, and we had veterinary corps men up there, British. It was showing them how to vet the horse, for want of another word. And he persuaded one of them to treat his VD with some treatment they had for horses. Well, when this got into his system, just about finished his days. That's the report we got. and he was discharged, and we never heard of him again.
What about, I mean, we're looking at some of the problems you had. I forgot to, you had drunken disorder. Was there any other disciplinary common problems that you'd have to deal with as Provost Sergeant?
Oh, well, the normal thing, a soldier looking around camp scrubby. Now, you couldn't be that scrubby because most of the day you're just in summer. You wore boots, socks, a pair of shorts, and bare butt. So it's only a cap badge and your boots for twisted boot laces. That was a favourite. Twisted boot laces. No excuse for twisted boot laces.
What do you mean by twisted?
The army boot laces were flat. Now, once the flatness had gone off, they started to roll like one of these are.
Like a round
now,
one?
Now, two flat ones and a twisted one.
Rolled over?
Rolled over, which spoiled the pattern of the boot. Or putties. We used to wear hole stops when you were on guard by day. So he had a pair of socks on and light infantry green hole stops at the top turned on. But other than that, you have very little in dress other than metal polished shirt behind the cap badge backing. Which didn't put him in the guard room. Gave him 3 days sick bed. Smart yourself up with it.
Would that be your job, or would it be the company sergeant major's? Or, you know.
Around camp, I mean, they might be doing any kinds of duties. And I would wander around camp. There's one incident I've got to tell you.
Okay.
You had a commanding officer, and I had a dog called Little Chai. And he had a dog, and it was like a Jack Russell that he had. And this day, he shouted at me, and he'd been walking around the camp, and he'd seen another one just like his. And I'm afraid he was a madman. This CEO we had.
Do you remember his name?
Yes. He's dead now. He's a prison governor later.
Never mind, I'll come back to you.
Very young and in hell of a temper. He shouted at me. He said, "Look, this dog, I want it shot. It looks like mine." I said, "Right, so he's coming to me." And then I said to Corporal Casey, "Go and get me a 3.8 pistol from the guard room and a couple of shells in it." So I went away, and I'm talking to somebody, and the dog ran off. I thought, let's soon find it. So Casey came back, and I said, "Where's the dog? Come on, we'll go and find the dog." Goes around the corner, I saw this dog, caught it over and shot it. And about half an hour later, I saw Jimmy come to me. He said, "I gave you a strict order to shoot that dog." I said, "I have done, but I shot it, because they both looked like my son rang me up about 15 years ago and said there's a man being killed in Hampshire who served with the doing right in Jimmy Gray, Major Gray, acting lieutenant colonel, and I shot the wrong dog." Good.
Sounds like it serves him right.
I believe he's a hell of a soldier in action, but
what about, I mean, you were promised, was there any sort of police side to it, as in people stealing things from the stores, black market activities, that sort of thing? You had to do
very little. We weren't detectives and we weren't policemen, we were just disciplinarians. The term in the Durham Light Infantry for a T-Leaf was always the Green Archer. That was the nickname. C Company's got a Green Archer, the stuff gun.
Why Green Archer?
I don't know. Every unit said, "Do you remember that Green Archer we had in Hong Kong? Or the Green Archer we had in wherever?" I don't know how that name came to be. But invariably they were caught. The latter's late tricks father them, one thing and another. You know, money would be going on. But lots of money.
And what would happen when they caught them?
They'd deal with it themselves, in most cases. Because proving it took some doing, didn't it? You know, if you're going through the proper legal procedures. But say, drunkenness was the main offence.
How did you all get on with the Greeks? You say there's bits of trouble in tavernas and things. What was the relationship like with the Greeks in Salonika?
Well, now that the war's over, Salonika, to the best of my knowledge, was a bit of a communistic area. There were a lot of communistic elements. And although the majority of the people, you get these little bands of young fellows, like you get today, there were no time for Greek troops. And they'd have a go wherever they could. And of course the Dillons weren't back when they're coming forward. Instead of bailing out, it's easy to talk, we used to say, you walk away. But we didn't walk away ourselves. It was the blind meeting the blind. But other than the main incidents that I've said to you, there was nothing entirely serious. That warranted, you know, years in detention.
Was it getting more regimental? It sounds like it with Twisted Bootlaces. I mean, would Twisted Bootlaces have been a problem in 1944?
Oh, no. You pick them up, get them smartened up, get them used to turn out at all times. Battalion policy. And you'd have your conferences with the CEO and adjutant. Old Honest John Curley was the commanding officer there. Proper gentleman. And he wanted the standards improved in all this business. And it was a gradual process. The carvers were getting harder, but the NCOs for promotion. You were taken on a 6-week carder from promotion to Lance Corporal, another 6 weeks from Lance Corporal to Corporal. Drilling, weapons, tactics, map reading, all these things were being brought in.
What about spit and polish? You were an HO. We'll talk about how you stopped being an HO, because that happened at Salonika, didn't it? But what a spit and polish, how did you feel about it?
Well, I always had pride in the turnout. It becomes second nature after you've been doing it so long. You can sit down all afternoon, three of you in the tent, talking, doing your boots. You wouldn't sit there doing nothing but smoke and play cards. You'd be doing the famous scabbard or your boot for the next guard to make sure.
Did you see the point in it?
I think you must have standards. And not to the extremes that the guards do, but I think you've got to have these standards, or else the troops are so easy to go push. If you give them an inch, they will take the yard. But once you get in the routine and being turned out, it becomes a competition between them. Who gets the stick on guard? Who's the best turned out man for this business?
So you were becoming a peacetime NCO. You'd been a junior hostilities. Now you had started to convert.
I was growing with it, and I was learning all the time. And of course, seeing the antics of a lot of these recluses came back, the time they spent, you see, in peacetime, they must have done very little. They didn't do half the training that we did after the war.
You mean the pre-war?
Pre-war. Well, I can gather from them, it was all spit and polish, majority of it.
So yours was spit and polish and training?
Training. Well, what you did then, everybody was going to manage it. You always had two pairs of boots. You had one for guard duties, drill, and one for field tactics, which you doubled. But we used to get three. We'd pair line an old pair. Get a new pair in return. Now that new pair, when I was Bravo Sam, I just throw that in the cell and say, get cracking on them, and I want the glass. Because once they've been glassed, they're neither used nor earned. All the nature's gone out the leather. If you go on the dark mode, you keep to wet through in 2 seconds, one. is what they do before. Down your half a tin of boot polish on, put a candle on the table and set fire to it, and burn all the oil out, and then start the smoke circles, spit and polish. Now, once that my boots were up, they went in the locker, and any specific duties, that's the only time they came out. And the other two pair had one on and one in for repair, so he didn't need to use the good ones. But if he used them too much, they cracked. They were ruined once they were bowled up to that level. All the nature's gone out the leather.
So what was do you see what I mean? What was the point of having a boots like that? I mean, I understand why you did it, but was it not inefficient in a sense to encourage soldiers to have boots in that condition?
Sensibly speaking, it was ridiculous. It had just been cleaned with the blackened and brush and polished up. The boots would have been serviceable for war at least and still clean entirely. You've got a point there, it might have been taken. But it got to a point where the boots, the guard boots were like glass. But they were ruined. You could see them cracking all around. And after so long, you need to get them in there and start all over again. And the 17 studs on the soles had to be polished. There were 17 studs in them leather soles them days. And on guard mounting, an order officer might say, put your foot up like a horse does. He'd count the studs to make sure they were all there and see if they were polished. A bit much.
Now, while you were there, your number must have come up while you were in Salonika. You know.
Yeah, before it came up. And I went upstairs.
You'd already decided you didn't want to go.
Oh, no argument about it. I'd already spoken to the adjutant.
They wanted you then?
Oh, yes. Oh, they did. I must say that. As a matter of fact, the adjutant was in the mess on this particular Sunday. He used to come every Sunday. The adjutant quartermaster invariably come to Sam's mess on Sunday morning for a drink. And he said, I want you in my office tomorrow for the enlistment. And what happens? At 23:59 hours, he struck off strength, SOS, 1 DLI. And at 0001 hours, a minute past 12, your TOS, 1 DLI, taken on strength. So I was discharged and re-enlisted in 2 minutes.
And when was that?
1946.
Do you know the date, roughly?
I can tell you, it's in the fire.
It's all right, dude. In the summer.
Huh?
In the summer, would it be all?
I think it must have been summer, yeah.
And you were taken on as provost, back. Did you have no sort of fears about that? I mean, you know, you were absolutely committed.
I couldn't get up there quick enough to sign. But not long after that sign, the big shock came. I've got to come home. Got to come home.
Why was that?
Because after so long, the army said that if you got to 3 years abroad, you had to come home. Because it was too long to be away. This business had gone on all over the 5 years and that was out. You had to come home and be re-established in England for a few months. So I, against my wishes, have to come home.
When was that?
1947.
Do you know what month?
November.
So you were out there for... You stayed in Salonika right through 46 through to 47?
Yeah.